Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy. We have a guest co-host this week. Hey, Matt.
Hello. Sorry, you wanted me to jump in there. Yeah, I apologize.
No problem. So Chris can't be with us because of weather. I'm not able to make it into the city. So our usual recording spot is inaccessible. And the funny thing is Chris does do a lot of video conference English lessons and stuff during the week, but we can't use that equipment for our live stream, so it's a shame because they've got a whole studio set up. We just can't appropriate it for the for our needs. But this week on the weekly, Drow are retconned by Pathfinder, Candela Obscura by Critical Role, one of their TTRPGs, their new systems. Mirrorscape's Arcana VTT, and that's capital A, capital R, Canna, for augmented reality. Fighting Fantasy card game. And Dragonbane gets additional translations. So let's start off with, Pathfinder. So Pathfinder announced at their PaizoCon 2023 that they will be moving away in a kind of a, to help them move away from the OGL, which allows them to freely use and adapt lore and characteristics of the Drow. They've decided just to step away from the Drow and kind of replace them in the setting. They're Into the Darklands panel at PaizoCon. The creative director, James Jacobs, said Drow will no longer be appearing in Pathfinder. So they're going to be replaced effectively in existing adventures and settings with serpent folk. So they'll become the villains of the Darklands. And they're doing a kind of an interesting thing. So Serpentfolk strongholds will replace the Drow cities in what they've established. The only exception is Zernakainen, right? Which was previously the largest city populated by Drow. It's now a mysterious ruin. So there is, you know, the kind of the remnants of Drow, a ruin that was a Drow city. But officially they're going to retcon everything else Drow. And because they have the Pathfinder Society, you know, that is kind of a thing in the world of Pathfinder, they are saying that it was just an unreliable agent that reported the existence of Drow. So they're not truly retconning it. They're just like, there was this bad actor that was in here making up this story about dark elves. No such thing as dark elves. It's serpent folk. So yeah, I thought that was pretty a pretty funny move. So so Drow, the origin of Drow. Of course, Drow is an old mythological character, and it, Drow actually comes from, the word that we're using now comes from the Scottish word trow, which was a kind of evil spirit or fairy, and just became a dark elf that exists, yeah, in a lot of in various versions and a lot of fantasy pop culture. And the Drow that we know were created by Gary Gygax that used them in the Underdark. So the kind of Forgotten Realms Drow are evil, matriarchal, demon-worshipping dark elves. And the most famous that Wizards is still going with, they built a statue to him at one of their offices. So Dritz Dwarden is their big name character. So D&D is sticking with Drow, and they're even using their name character. And actually, I think they're having Salvatore do a new trilogy of Drow novels where they make not evil Drow, you know, where they're doing a little bit of their own retconning where they're not saying this is an evil race. There's a diversity among Drow. Some of the spider worshippers may be bad, but there are good farmer Drow out there. Yeah.
So I never played in the Pathfinder world.
Mm-hmm.
Were there Drow subterranean like the D&D Drow?
I can't remember. Yeah, I've only played a couple of the very early first edition adventures, so Drow didn't come up. But I imagine, yeah, because they were saying that the Pathfinder Drow were actually even more wicked than the original D&D version. And recently they have kind of recontextualized them and, you know, made them a little more nuanced. But the actual Paizo Drow were worse. Mm-hmm. Worse than if you can imagine. So, I didn't read anything about them or have any experience. They said that they will stay in... you know, the previous existence of them in previous editions of the, you know, players' core books and things. The rule books will still allow you to create drow characters if you want. So they're not going to include them in their adventure paths anymore, but they still exist if you already, and if you already have a drow character, you don't have to turn him into a serpent folk.
Larry's a serpent now. Yeah.
But yeah, so the player creation rules for drow will still be found in the core rule book, but they're not going to consider them, you know, canon. They're kind of this, this thing that they're using to differentiate themselves. And I think that's a good move. And so in the OGL originated creatures, so still chromatic dragons and Drugar and the kind of the dark dwarves will still exist. And so we'll see.
Hmm.
Yeah, we'll see what they do with those.
Were they the really dark skinned like the D&D drow?
I think so. Yeah. Anything that I remember, I know there's an adventure path, I think, kind of like Underdark that like has that they play a big role, but I think so. Although I think Wizards has started to lighten up drow. They're more kind of lilac, you know, colored as opposed to actual
like dark. Blue elves.
Right. Yeah. Bluish, purplish kind of elves. Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, like that episode of Community that was removed from Netflix brought up, you know, cosplaying as a drow, especially like a traditional, like, you know, original D&D drow is blackface, right? You're basically, so it makes it strange that they're going to lean into making Dritz, you know, such a recognizable, iconic character and probably support him, you know, with more books or, you know, whatever they're going to do in the future because, yeah, it's weird with all the racial sensitivity that D&D is attracting. You know, the dark elves being a, you know, evil race seems like they're just asking for more Twitter problems.
Yeah, well, that's a money decision, right?
Just
it makes them a lot of money.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's funny. Yvette Nicole Brown, the actress who played the, I can't remember her character's name, but the heavyset African-American actress on Community, she came out and said it was stupid that they took the episode away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really strange move, but I guess, you know, Netflix is very sensitive and maybe they're bored, you know, it was a decision by their board or whatever. That kind of stuff is really strange. And so, but it seems like Pathfinder has been a little bit ahead and Paizo has been a little bit ahead of Wizards as far as, you know, getting rid of the word race in their in their book and doing things like that to kind of, they're reacting a little bit faster. It seems like Wizards is slow and not sure what they're doing.
Pivoting to servant people, I actually kind of like because servant people are a classic pulp fantasy bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, I think that works as an opposite to human, opposite to like versions of humans. I think lizard people, serpents work well. Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's a good pulpy villain. So
it's funny that D&D dark elves and I guess Pathfinder too. Like you have these subterranean people who somehow have really dark skin, right. and then you have topside dark elves in Warhammer who are super pale because it's not dark like physically dark, it's like dark on the inside, you know. It's like, no, they're bad.
Right.
But I
like, because, you know, there are a lot of righteous condescending elf cultures in fantasy. I like evil elves, you know. I think that they need an opposite, you know. The holier than thou elves do need a sadistic, you know, spider worshipping opposite. So,
Well, that's classic elf, right? The Seely and the Unseely. Mm. Like you got to have both.
Right. Yeah. So they are losing a bit of a balance and moving away from kind of the original, you know, myth based, folklore base of fantasy. But I can understand where they're doing it because I think making Pathfinder as different as possible from D&D will probably only help them.
So they had like giant meteors crash into their Dark Elf cities that said like Hasbro TM on the side of them or something.
Right, right.
So that's why there's only ruins now.
Yes. It was a lot of cease and desist. Yeah, a big oh man. Yeah, so we'll continue. Yeah, we'll see what Paizo does in the future. And I heard that the third and final version of Orc is on the way, like they're like the latest revision. So they're still moving forward with everything. And separating themselves.
I still don't understand how that works, because mm-hmm. it seems like some very different systems have signed up for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything is going to be included in that. Yeah, so it is going to be tricky because, Chris was saying, Creative Commons, if you're just careful about how you structure it, seems like it would work just as well. But you're going to have to do kind of the same things. Say, this is under Orc, this is ours, you know? But yeah, I don't know. So we'll see. And we'll see what the final versions of it look like, and then how people, you know, use it in their publications, you know, how things are going to read and what the terms are.
Cool.
Yeah. So speaking of new ways to role play and new role playing systems, and some that feel a little bit derivative, Critical Role just had a live stream, which is going to be, I think, publicly posted to everyone that's not a critter in early this month. Like first week of June, but their Candela Obscura was a new so it's a new original game system and a new setting that they're releasing, and I think it's going to be like a Darrington Press project. So they have a fantasy setting, which I think is a D20, and it's called something Dagger or something, or it just has like one of those fantasy names. So they have a fantasy setting, and this is their Not Cthulhu investigator system, and it's D6 based, so it seems to be really ripping off, or I mean not ripping off, iterating on it seems to be inspired by the Forged in the Dark system, the Blades in the Dark style system, and so it's you know, a Forged in the Dark system that's not completely Forged in the Dark, and it's Cthulhu investigation that's not Cthulhu. So they're kind of generic, they're making it their own in kind of a weird kind of bland way. It's funny to do that. And the thing, because we've been playing Vaesen recently, the Friedley game, they're not going to be able to touch that, as far as, I mean, that is such a good system and such a great setting, especially because it's inspired specifically by, you know, myth and folklore of, yep. They're naming it specifically, and they're having actual, the actual creatures, the actual, spirits of nature and creatures in it. This is just going to be all kinds of like, oh, whatever, mystery, nonsense, whatever. And the way that they're doing it is, I think it's a good system because it kind of forwards a good system for their purposes, because it forwards the narrative, you know, very little dice rolling, not a lot of calculation. Gets the mechanics out of the way and lets them tell a story, and it's episodic. So that'll work well for live stream. So you can jump in at any one, you know, any episode, and, you know, learn who the characters are and watch them interact. So instead of it being a continuing campaign, it's, you know, like Vaesen's Mysteries, it's going to have these little adventures. I forget what they're calling them. But so they're streaming, streaming it. And so it's a horror anthology series. Is what they're calling it. And you can take a look at the rules right now. There's a quick start guide out that doesn't have everything, but gives you a pretty good idea of what they're doing and how they're playing it, and lets you even give it a shot yourself. So yeah, kind of a D6 system where you have to roll at least a 4 to succeed. So a 6 is a success. A 4 and 5 is a mixed success. So success with a condition, a success with some negative aspect. And then a critical success is multiple 6s. So very simple D6 die rolling. So a tiered success is what they're calling it. And then very simple skills, things like move, strike, survey. And then everything is included under that. Like, you know, several different traditional or classic fantasy skills are included under these very broad words like move and strike.
Hmm.
And then,
You know how I knew this was going down?
Oh, yeah.
Because like 20 different videos showed up in my YouTube feed from people who aren't affiliated with Critical Role, mm-hmm. all like doing their take on it, you know? And it's like, I don't even follow Critical Role. And mm-hmm. I'm like, why is this here? I don't care about any of this. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's maybe exciting for some people that are, you know, fans of them, because they're going to be releasing their own original system. So they're going to be freeing themselves from any other company. It's going to be like a total creative venture owned by them, published by them. So it's interesting. It's an interesting development that they've decided to, kind of make it their own thing.
Is it a dice pool?
Yeah, basically, you're rolling. So based on how many points you have in certain things, you roll that number of D6. And I think you always roll a minimum of one D6. And then there are things that give you rerolls. And then similar to like critical injuries in VSN, you take scars, which have a negative effect on you. And instead of losing effectiveness, when you take enough the kind of damage that they have in the system, you take a scar, and then you have to move a point from one skill to another, or one kind of so you still have the same number of points. You don't become less effective overall. You just your effectiveness moves from maybe physical to mental or whatever. So it's an odd kind of point balancing thing that they're doing.
Are they building an overarching like world or lore into this?
I think it's
truly just Monster of the Week kind of.
Well, I think they name, similar to the society in VSN, their name. So Candela Obscura is this like secret society of, you know, supernatural investigators, and so and it's turn of the century, so it's, you know, same kind of 19th century setting, and giving you the same. So you're investigators for the secret society. You confront occult horrors from beyond, and you're also trying to keep the hidden true nature of magical incursions a secret, you know, in the world. You're trying to suppress these this breakthrough. So, and I think they even named that veil between like this supernatural world and the real world. There's some name for it in the setting as well, and things are breaking through. And so similar to what they did in like Tales from the Loop or VSN, you have these things happening, and I can't remember, they call them assignments, that's right. So very thematic. You have assignments instead of mysteries or missions or whatever. An assignment basically, and I forget how they instead of an invitation to a mystery, you just get an assignment from the society. They just like, you know, you get a pamphlet. It's like Mission Impossible, supernatural Mission Impossible, or Scooby Doo.
Yeah, is there like more of a Cthulhu side of it where the investigators can learn supernatural things, or is it strictly just normal humans dealing with supernatural?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is some magical aspect of it. I didn't see, like, they showed the character sheet. They did there was a video that was just a quick run through of the system, and, you know, just basically promoting the quick start. And what they include so far now is just pre-gen characters, probably the characters that are being played in the live stream. And they're calling the Illuminated Worlds system, this D6 system that they're doing is Illuminated Worlds. Yeah. And, and there's a field guide. Yeah. So there's a field guide, to the world. So there must be some something going on. I didn't see anything where you like gained skills or abilities, like, you know, some kind of, you know, clairvoyance or psychic ability or anything, but it's possible. There's no stress, and they're missing the flashbacks, which is a really interesting mechanic in Blades in the Dark. There's no flashback system, and the gear system is very minimal, so they're not keeping it simple.
The system to me sounds more like a, you know, cliff notes of a year zero kind of system.
It does, yeah. It is. It's a very simplified version of it. There's very little math. That's the thing that I guess the criticism that Blades in the Dark gets is that it's got a lot of fiddly subsystems that a lot of people just don't even use in the game. So this has none of that. This has none of that additional depth. It's just the simple system, which also, you know, makes it very the narrative. You know, nothing's going to get in the way of the story. So that works well for a critical role, you know, live stream, actual play.
I wonder how, I think it'll work fine for the show, but I wonder how in the world of other games, like how their game is going to sell and hold up. It's got to have a shtick, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like any horror game needs its own purpose. Vassen, it has this wonderful folklore thing, but it also has the overarching, you know, thing with the society. And they just announced a new campaign book, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
And then you have like Vampire. Well, you know, that has its crazy politics and everything. Mm-hmm. The ones that try to just sneak in and be just a horror game, like, what was that old one? Chill. They don't have legs because there's nothing. There's nothing in there except the monsters.
Right.
There's no like overarching theme or lore, you know, that kind of keeps you interested. So I think it would work fine for the show. I just wonder what kind of legs it'll have out there in the world as a game that people will buy and play.
Yeah, that's true. It does seem like that publisher, though, they do like, because they, you know, they did a setting, Critical Role released their setting for 5e. You know, there was an actual book published, so maybe they do want to, you know, flesh it out a bit more. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it definitely needs something to differentiate itself. It can't be, you know, Cthulhu light, you know, Forged in the Dark light, you know. So it's not
Are there, like, did they mention how they're handling, like, horror or madness or terror or whatever they call it?
There are a couple kinds of damage. You lose effectiveness. So then I think they're staying away from madness and insanity, and they're just calling it, like, mental damage, physical damage, and something else. There's, like, three tracks that you can take damage to. I should have that character sheet gives you a lot of information about the mechanics, and there's a lot of, like, you know, little keeping track of points for your rerolls and things, so you can spend it's like kind of like an inspiration, I forget what they name it, but you can spend things to add a die or do rerolls, and it does regenerate by certain means, but it's a couple of little currencies in there to help you to help, you know, when things are important. And they have a thing that they're calling a circle sheet. So I'm not sure if that's how they track, you know, kind of like their headquarters or whatever, if that's how they track, you know, NPCs and what they're doing. But that may be something that leads more to a larger, you know, overarching narrative between the assignments, So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this takes off. But I think it'll work well as a, you know, being opposite. It didn't look like the little clips they showed on this little promotional video didn't look very scary, you know, and it wasn't people like, oh my god, you know, really concerned. They were just worried about failing their roles.
Yeah.
And of course they're all decked out in their little, you know, Victorian garb. Everyone has to dress like an investigator if you're going to be on that live stream. So I didn't get a great feel for how it's going to play. As far as the tone and like the tension and things, so yeah, we'll see. But yeah, and also, so yeah, so much of this is I don't know. Are people really looking for that? They may kind of stumble into something though by having these simplified systems that are good for actual plays, because, you know, there will be people that want to imitate what they're doing. So that may be funny to see if they did kind of figure it out. People don't want deep, rich, intricate mechanics and compelling systems. They just want something they can play online.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. So yeah, I'll put a link to the quick start if you want to take a look at those rules. And that actual play is going to go live on their channel sometime early this month. so you can see that first session and see how it goes. And the one thing that I thought was odd is when they do their roles, they just say, "Oh, I got a 6 or I got a 4 or I got a 5." And maybe, well, I guess then they let the game master translate that, but it seems like they should have said, "Oh, I have a success or mixed success," you know, to keep it a little bit more like you're not just calling out numbers. Yeah. But maybe that's from D&D. Maybe that's a more D&D thing, but we'll see. So there's a new kid in town. Actually, they've been around for a little while, but there's a new kid in town that's going to give Wizards of the Coast a run for their money with their little virtual tabletop walled garden that they're planning on building. A company called Mirrorscape has an open license rival directly to what D&D is doing. The difference is they're pushing it more towards augmented reality and mobile devices. So this isn't going to be people sitting around with laptops. It'll be people sitting around holding up iPads or, you know, holding up their phone, pointing it at the table and seeing a 3D, you know, seeing the 3D terrain, their miniatures and everything represented on the tabletop through the device, like through the cameras, through the device's camera. So the name of this VTT is Arcana, capital A, capital R. And they had a Kickstarter last year and basically promised iOS and Android release, eventually PC support, but they're not anywhere near that yet. They've been in the beta for Android for about 2 months, and open beta is launching soon, I think next month, so maybe July. So backers are getting access to these beta versions from the Kickstarter, and they had 3,700 people give them almost about $400,000 to do this initial development of this system. So they're putting and so now that it's the open beta is releasing, they're starting to do press and trying to get some attention. The big difference, aside from the mobile and the AR thing, but the big difference is they are cooperating with physical tabletop like terrain and miniatures companies to do digital versions of existing models and terrain. So companies like Reaper, Dwarven Forge, Hero Forge, and Fat Dragon are all working together with them to have their actual miniatures, actual things you can purchase from them that you may already have to be included in this 3D world. So if you bought a Reaper Elf and that represents your player character, you're going to be able to find the equivalent exact same model of that elf for sale in their store. So an interesting and but because it's open source as well, they want to have as much development as possible and then let people develop assets and things to then be able to sell as well. So you'll be able to, if you're going to support this, if this is your tabletop, virtual tabletop of choice, there'll be a store where you can sell things you've built for this to make money yourself. So it's got a mobile focus, but, you know, it does everything basically VTTs do, keeps track of the character stats, the die rolls, you know, on the digital table. And this is a little bit surprising. The creative director of this project is none other than Joe Manganiello. So he's playing both sides. So he's going to do documentaries for Wizards of the Coast and E1, but he's going to support another virtual tabletop. So yeah, he was on their promotion video as their creative director. So I'm like, oh, so is Wizards going to be happy about that? That he's like directly going to compete with their do or die kind of project?
Kyle be mad.
Yeah, I know. Kyle's not going for this. So we may not see Joe in his dream Dragonlance TV series after all, depending on, you know, how competitive Arcana is with what Wizards is doing. But yeah, I thought it's interesting. The promotion videos, their websites are much nicer than their promotion videos. Their promotion videos are the production quality is not great. And what they showed of the 3D world still looks very okay, very like PlayStation 2. You know, so it's not blowing anybody away. So I don't think they're using the same systems that Wizards is attempting to do the Unreal Engine. I don't think that it's Unreal because it doesn't quite have the detail. And So, but both of these systems, like the demonstrations that we've seen of both of these systems, looks odd. Like four people sitting around a table all on laptops, or four people holding up mobile devices, doesn't really feel like participating in a tabletop, you know, social experience of, you know, playing a game. It's putting this technology between you that's seems kind of unnecessary.
I'm wondering if, because you said they made about 400,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So Alchemy almost made 800,000.
Oh, wow.
And I'm wondering, this, just from what you just explained, this feels like mixed messaging. Like, for me, a VTT is when we can't be together.
Yes, yes.
Right? I mean, if I lived in Japan or you lived over here, I would demand we played at a table.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So I wonder if, like, it's kind of a mixed message. Like, wait a minute, are we all, is this like this thing where we have to hold it up and look at it while we're together?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a thing so we can play remotely? Which is it? Right. Sounds like it's both.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know how valuable that in-person version of it is going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, that almost feels like unnecessary tech.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, it really does. I think AR has that problem. And they're saying they're supporting not only mobile devices, so smartphones and tablets, but also, you know, visors and goggles and things that, you know, are being created now. And it's like, that is a really weird. So I can understand, like, a couple of people are together, a couple of people are remote, and you kind of, you know, you could cobble together a session. But yeah, it does seem very strange. And to sit in around an empty table, like you're literally looking at an empty table and seeing digital assets, is strange. So when they promote, oh, there's no cleanup, there's no setup, it's very easy to, you know, just jump right into your campaign. It's like, yeah, but touching things and, you know, like spilling your drinks on your map is part of the fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Setup and cleanup is important bullshit time.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's like, I mean, okay, and this also comes another thing where I don't really like to play games with randoms. Like,
yeah.
And so maybe this is more for people who, you know, put a game together online or something and they aren't friends.
Right.
Maybe look at it a different way. I'm trying to be understanding about this. But it's like, if I'm getting together with my friends, I want the mess, I want the I want the interaction at the table. Like, that, I don't get that at all.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. So they Grant Anderson, who's the one of the founders of Mirrorscape, talked to Dicebreaker, and so we got a few quotes from him. And he's saying things like, since we're mobile first, you can pick up your game session from last weekend, no matter where you are, and play with your friends either around the table or around the world. Okay. And that's odd. Yeah. So like you're saying, it is, it's kind of like, it's two things at once that, and neither of them are completely, you know, they're that useful. So since it's digital, you can build bigger than you could before, much more economically, no setup, no cleanup. Always ready to drop on your table no matter what. And yeah, in the video they have like the, you know, terrain and everything drops on the table and makes this like boulder crushing sound of like, you know, if you dropped a keep or a castle, you know, on a surface. So it's like, we have to do that every time we play. We have to watch the dungeon come crashing down onto the tabletop.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, that's all right. So you can still play around the table and have the best parts of the RPG with your friends. And as if you're around the table with them. So yeah, it's weird. They're not solving a problem. Like, there was no big demand for this, you know, that they're fixing something that, because we already have VTTs that sufficiently, you know, represent everything, virtual dice rolls and 3D worlds and, you know, fog of war and light and grid maps and things. So we always have known that we can't do everything or create it all. So we are a creator platform for a tabletop gameplay. So over time, our users will be able to provide most, if not all, of the content that they create for sale on our marketplace and participate monetarily. So our success is their success and vice versa.
So two things they're doing that are, I think, are probably pretty smart. Mm-hmm. You know, bringing in these miniature makers to sell their models, probably pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, having an open marketplace, very smart. I know that roll one that we
messed
with a little bit does that. And I think, right, the Roll20 has some kind of marketplace, right?
I think they do, yeah. Yeah, because they're connected with DriveThru now. So I think you can sell, I think they'd use DriveThru's marketplace as their, yeah, for their assets.
I have a sneaky suspicion the D&D one's not going to have an open marketplace.
Yes, right, right, yeah. You're going to be well vetted if you're submitting anything to them. Yeah, that's true.
Yes. But I feel like I've played games that had, was it Ascension? It was something where you had the option to roll dice in the app or roll them physically.
Right.
And then, but then you would have to enter your results. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like, if I'm at a table, I want to roll my dice.
Yes.
But then you're having to enter them. It's like, eh.
Yeah, it's weird. And a lot of those like, you know, map-driven miniatures games and things have had that problem too, where they develop an app or an assistant that does a little bit of bookkeeping, but mostly, yeah, you are entering what's happening on the table into the app. And so you have two things going on at the same time, and neither of them are very satisfying because they're distract, they're taking away from each other. And this is doing, you know, that you're not doing that anymore. Everything is virtual, but then there's no tactile experience. There's nothing. I mean, yeah, it's a very odd choice, and it didn't look compelling. Like what they were showing, it's like, oh wow, look, there is a dungeon on this table, but when you look at the table, it's empty. Like that doesn't do anything for anybody.
So.
Right.
So again, that's just unnecessary tech.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So Anderson wants, Arcana to become, or they want, I guess, Mirrorscape to be the Apple of virtual tabletops. So they want easy to use tools for creators to tell stories and provide immersive gameplay experiences, which that little 3D kind of stuff is not. It just doesn't do it. The one thing that they're trying to do to make it a little bit more immersive, which means you're basically going to be doing this with your, you know, iPad or whatever, is doing a life scale mode, which puts you at the, you know, eye level, the miniature, you know, the miniature level view. So you're basically the scale, the camera is on the scale of your miniature in the environment. So you can see things as your character would see them. But okay. Yeah. That doesn't do anything. So they are planning a PC version, and I can't imagine how difficult this is to set up just using mobile devices. It can't be fun at all. The interface has to be terrible.
If you're building like your dungeon to work in that system to be 3D viewable and everything, oh man, yeah, that's going to be a pain in the butt on a tablet.
Yeah. Yeah. So the PC version has to exist before people are going to develop content for this, because they need a stable, easy to use interface with this software. And mobile devices are never going to be that. Touch controls and pinching and zooming is not going to be an easy way to build anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we'll see. So yeah, so mobile devices and AR headsets is where they want it to head. And but probably what's going to happen is people are going to build this on a PC, and then they're going to play it on a PC. So it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be played probably pretty similar to what Wizards is going to do. So yeah, I don't know. You know, because things like, they have augmented reality in some of those like geolocation games, so like the Pokemon Go and things like that. So you can turn your camera on and you can see the model of the Pokemon standing on the fountain or near the Dunkin' Donuts or whatever through your phone. But that, most people turn that off because it kills your battery. And it's like, it's like such an unnecessary little feature. So why, yeah, I don't know. Why even do that? Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how much more we hear from them, and if they are truly going to be a competitor or take away anything. Joe thinks they might be. I mean, he's the creative director, so I wouldn't get in his way. But so
we'll keep, okay, Joe.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on Arcana and see where that goes. So a little taste of some classic fantasy. That classic game book series, Fighting Fantasy, done by Steve Jackson, and not the other Steve Jackson, and Ian Livingston, of the kind of founders of Games Workshop. Their books are being remade into a cooperative card game. So they're doing an adaptation of a fighting fantasy as a cooperative card game. And this is by the designer of Brass, which I guess on like Board Game Geek and stuff, yeah, is one of the most popular. It just beat Gloomhaven as like the, you know, in its little top list. So yeah, so for if you don't know about fighting fantasy, so there are some British authors that created this and kind of the seminal single player game books that started in 82. So the first one they released was The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, and the whole series has had 75 books so far. So it, you know, it had quite a run, and most people kind of remember them fondly. That was a lot of, you know, if you can't get together with friends or whatever, that is your fantasy role play experience, is, you know, one of those games. Or Tunnels and Trolls. And so, yeah, so Martin Wallace is going to be the designer. So he's worked previously on Discworld, London, Railways of the World, and Brass. And so what they're trying to create is an elegant card-based system that gives you the feel of a role-playing game without the need for a game master. So easy to pick up. Players are rolling dice to level up between adventures. But I think otherwise you're pretty much card-based. So they announced at PAX East what they're going to be doing, and campaign one that they're going to be producing is going to include four players that can embark on five adventures based on the original three books or four books. Sorry, the original four books: Warlock of Firetop Mountain, Island of the Lizard King, Death Trap Dungeon, and the Forest of Doom, with a promise of more to come. So, of course, how would you fund this? Well, you'd go to crowdfunding. So Kickstarter, July 1st, will be held for what they're calling Fighting Fantasy Adventures, Campaign 1. So this will be the first series of five adventures for four players, but it's covering the first four books. Just to make it as confusing as possible.
Yeah, four.
Yeah, right. So hopefully, yeah, the mechanics and everything will be fun. I mean, that setting, if they use some of the original artwork, or it could be, yeah, really wonderful, and kind of nostalgic as a fun way to play those adventures. If you've forgotten them, or you played them as a kid or whatever, and to be able to share them, you know, with the next generation, this might be a good way to go about that. So
I would love to know. I don't know. Have you ever played any Martin Wallace games?
No, I haven't.
He comes up with some wild mechanics sometimes.
Oh, cool.
He did Study in Emerald, which is based on a Neil Gaiman story.
Ah.
A Neil Gaiman Cthulhu story, which is based on an old Sherlock Holmes short story.
Oh, that's cool.
He basically took that story and turned it into this Cthulhu mythos thing.
Uh-huh.
And Martin Wallace made a game for it, and it is insane.
Wow.
It is like a 6-hour long political knife in the back crazy game with hidden traitors and just all kinds of wackiness. So I'm just kind of wondering, like, did they put him on a leash for this, or is it going to be full on Martin Wallace wackiness? I wonder.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder. I wonder what, how they're going to let him loose or what's going to happen. Yeah. Cause there is fun things you can do in that setting, mechanics that go a little bit outside what you would expect in just kind of, you know, dungeon crawling and stuff. So yeah. We'll have to see. I'm curious about it. And I'm also want to see kind of the production values and how they want to represent things on the cards. So we'll see, because if it's all like, you know, new digital art or whatever, it may not be as hit you right in the nostalgia strings.
I might admit, who's the publisher?
Oh, I think it's they just named the designer. So yeah, they just named Martin Wallace. I can go. Let me real quick take a look at the preview, because they'll mention who it is in the preview of. Preview page. So on the Kickstarter, they're calling Wallace Designs. Yeah, yeah. So maybe it's going to be since they're going to crowdfunding, maybe it is going to be an attempt for him to kind of have this whole thing under control. Yeah. So yeah, that's the company that they named. So yeah, he may not be on a leash at all. This may be the craziest fighting fantasy we've ever seen.
I'm down. I'll check it out.
Yeah, definitely. It looks.
Maybe you can get some like Ian Miller and John Blanche art or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, so July 1st, that goes to Kickstarter, and a link to the preview page, and then you can, you know, sign up to get notified. And then lastly, this was good news. So the highly anticipated Dragonbane, so coming out, I think retail releases this fall, right? The Kickstarters are being fulfilled over the summer. They're announcing they have 6 additional languages. So previously it was basically Swedish and English, and basically, you know, Dragonbane is just is the English version of this. The Drakkar Ulk Dumannar has been developed, you know, has been independently running for a long time. There's a lot of, you know, stuff that's been produced in Swedish forever, you know, for that game through different editions. But Dragonbane by Free League is going to get a German release, a French release, an Italian release, a Spanish release, Norwegian, and Danish, and all with companies specifically, you know, based in those countries. So publishers that have released games before, and the German company is actually the company that released Chronopia, the miniature war game. So maybe there'll be some synergy there. So yeah, that was good to hear. So it was one of the most anticipated RPGs when they were doing the vote, the End World vote. It was up there, and so right now you can pre-order it. You can pre-order Dragonbane, which will give you the complete package of PDFs of everything that's going to be included in that set at Drive-Thru. And there's also a free 48-page quick start, which we played. The first episode is on the channel of that Rittermound quick start adventure. That's good fun.
Yeah, where's episode 2?
It's coming. And So if you don't know anything about Dragonbane, the kind of intention of it is fast-paced gameplay, minimal preparation time, and making the game highly accessible. So a lot of people are calling it, this is like one of the best entry points for new RPG gamers, just because of the tone and everything. It's not overwhelming. So engaging for both newcomers and seasoned RPG players. So try to strike a balance between humor and high stakes campaign, you know, challenges and things. So a couple of very nice reviews on Drive-Thru already for Dragonbane are, after playtesting Dragonbane extensively over the past 2 months, I think this might be the best game to teach new players how to play in an RPG I've ever come across. So that's pretty glowing. And another review was, this most certainly makes me not even want to look back at D&D 5e. It is exactly what I want a fantasy system to be. It is great for both one-shots and long campaigns. So yeah, some good things to be said, and we had really good fun with it, and can't wait to see the
I'm really looking forward to getting the physical copies and just going through it all. Is it going to be called Dragons and Demons in these other languages,
or I wonder yeah, because they just said it probably depends on, you know, how dominant the Christian church is. I don't know. Because
Then Norway, it's definitely Dragons and Demons.
right. Yeah, so it's a variety of different types of companies. Arcane Asylum in France, Need Games in Italy, Devir Games in Spanish, Aegir Games in Norway, and Ferrara Sagara in Denmark. So I'm curious, what they will do, because if they want to, whoever's publishing it locally thinks it's better to have a something and something title to make people understand this is like D&D, or naming it something, you know, more unique, like that single word, Dragonbane is a single word title, I think works well, because it's got dragon in it, but it distinguishes itself from a something and something game, you know, that Tunnels and Trolls, Dungeons and Dragons, Castles and Crusaders, you know, all the ampersand games.
Yeah.
It differentiates itself. So, yeah, I'll definitely want to find that out. I want to take a look and see, once these things are released, what kind of naming they went with. And what, you know, because they're basically licensing it from Free League. So what Free League is going to want to do as far as the identity of the game.
Because I think it was not, obviously, it was the ultimate RPG in Sweden forever,
right?
But I think it had a similar impact in Norway and Denmark.
Oh, interesting.
So I wouldn't be surprised if at least those two get the old name, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, to keep that connection. Yeah, and the at least Norwegian and Swedish aren't so different. They can probably just share materials for a while. But yeah, this new system, that's true. They probably already have a fan base there, so they don't want to shake it up too much.
But that is all Western Europe. So yeah, like you were saying before that we started, they need to take a look at like Japan.
Yeah, definitely.
Some other markets.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be hard to get in the way of Dungeons and Dragons here if you had a something that was, you know, had some compelling gameplay or a little bit lighter or easier to get into. I think that would make a big difference in Japan. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that was good news. And there are links to all that stuff on DriveThruRPG in the description. And also, if I didn't put a link, I will put a link. We finally have an affiliate code for Noble Knights. So if you're in North America, and they do ship worldwide, but if you're in North America and you like physical books, Noble Knights is a great resource. And as well as, you know, miniatures and board games and all sorts of things. But Noble Knights is a great... and also, if you're looking to get rid of your collection, they monthly or every so often, I don't know if it's monthly, but they have calls for like kind of most wanted stuff. So this month we're buying, you know, old Warhammer. This month we're looking at old D&D. So they'll, they'll give you maybe a little bit better deal on buying your old stuff. And they have an insane collection. It's a little bit expensive for international shipping, but if you're in North America, it's quite reasonable. And just going through the store itself is just a real nice nostalgic trip because they have everything. Even if they only had it at one time and now it's out of stock, you'll have listings for just everything in every system. So a lot of fun out of print games and old versions of stuff to peruse.
They have all kinds of stuff. I bought some MDF terrain for Stargrave on there.
Nice. Yeah. So help support the channel and we'll get a little, I think our break is mostly store credit. So we'll get more stuff to review and more stuff to play on the channel. If you click on that affiliate link. So yeah, so that's going to do it for this week. So where can people find you, Matt, besides running a world a world building session tomorrow? What do you want people to take a look at?
I'm still on Twitter at Hargald, HARGALD.
Cool.
It's the same on Instagram. I don't know. I do try to put some game stuff on there.
Good.
But you know, don't if you're easily offended, don't check it out. But if you aren't, come on by.
Excellent. And I am still doing my single panel gag cartoon, so Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch. If you want to take a look at that, the link to the archive is in the description. So that's on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you like what we're doing with the weekly, please consider becoming a weakling on our Patreon. So that lets us know that you're watching the weekly and you want to let us know what you want to see more of or how to cover certain things. So patreon.com/upturntable, and there's various support for our lore series, actual play, anything that we're doing, and you get early access to things, of course, and then stuff that's only for members or patrons. And speaking of members, yeah, that join button below this video, if you're actually watching this, will give you a chance to become a member. And I actually think Patreon is doing free trials, has just started free trials. So as soon as that's available for us, I'll implement that as well. So if you want to see what the Patreon looks like, you can try it out for free. And so YouTube membership is easy, and that's all, you know, built through your YouTube or Google account. So give that a shot. And if you hang out in the chat, you may just luck into some free memberships. So the chat gets gifted free memberships sporadically. As long as you're not Miguel, you may end up with a free membership to see what see what's going on there. So that'll do it for this week. So thanks for joining us. And thank you again, Matt, for so last minute being here so we can have a two-person discussion instead of a monologue.
My pleasure. No problem, man.
Excellent. Okay. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.